Welcome to the HU Movemakers Podcast, where we highlight folks that are blazing the trail and making moves in Howard culture.
Hello and welcome to the HU Movemaker Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Mercer, School of Business, Howard University, class of 2003. Today I have a very special guest. You know we highlight movers and shakers from the university, so I got a very, very special guest. Man, I'm talking about a visionary, a businessman, a leader, 18.5 M's. You know, all the way from Fayetteville State, MBA from Howard University, man. He got the prominent alumnus award from Howard University, School of Business Dean's Advisory Board for Fayetteville State University, School of Economics, Adjunct Professor of Entrepreneurship for Howard University, a philanthropist, the Urban League board member, the list goes on and on. Started his first business at, age 24?
That's right.
It'll be a multi-million dollar enterprise, you know, by now. You know, we're talking none other than Nicholas Perkins, proud member of Omega Psi Phi fraternity. Welcome to the show, brother.
No, thank you for having me, bro. Honored, privileged to be here.
Man, so, man, I don't know where to start. I mean, you know, not too many brothers purchasing franchises out here.
Yeah.
18.5 million going viral, man.
Yeah.
Is it as sexy as it sounds? Or is it
man, listen, man, you talking about sleepless nights, you know, burning the candle at both ends, the unbelievable amount of pressure. But at the same time, man, it's all worth it, man. I'm very excited. About the future, blessed to have the opportunity of, you know, been the company that was selected for the brand, man. It was a competitive process, interest from another 149 other companies, man. So, you know, I felt very honored and very privileged to, you know, keep pressing forward throughout the process, man, and was able to get it done. But now the real work starts.
The real work. That's what they say, the real work. So how many locations do you have?
So there are 92 locations in the Fud Rutgers system in total. Of those 92, I own 14 of those restaurants in a separate deal, as well as being a franchisor. So a lot of people have gotten a little bit confused about, you know, the news media. I have about 30 franchisees, you know what I mean, that actually own their own restaurants. So I don't own all 92 restaurants. I own the intellectual property, the brand itself, and I have 14 of those restaurants as a franchisee myself. But what made this deal so powerful was that I became the first African-American to own and control a system, right? So now I can sell other Fud Rutgers to other people, you know what I mean? And bring them, you know, into the system. And then on that model, you know, we collect royalties. In my private business that operates 14 of those restaurants, you know, I actually own and operate restaurants just like the other franchisees do. So I'm wearing dual hats, but, you know, it's, you know, a great brand, man, that people recognize, like you said, you know, man, people talk about it. Got so many fond memories, you know, of the brand. And, you know, it's time to bring it back. You know, it's time to create new memories. It's time to get the brand in front of, you know, the new generation. And so, you know, I'm excited about it, man. I got, you know, a lot of work ahead of me. But at the same time, you know, bro, I feel very blessed and very honored, you know, to be a part of the rebuilding here.
Man, that's amazing, man. Congratulations on that,
Mike. Thank you.
You know, I remember they had a Fud Rutgers on 7th Street at one time when I was at Howard not too long ago.
And yeah. Then
I was they had one, I forgot what South Suburb it was here in Chicago where I'm at. And my dad took me on my birthday to get a Fud Rutgers burger. But it's good to see that, man, that we've been represented in that model. So
yes,
how does one, because I mean, like, so you own 14 franchises, you own the intellectual property for the franchise. How did you tell me about the competitive bidding process and how does a brother go from Fayetteville
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? To 18 Milleville. You know what
yes.
I'm saying? To
you know, what's interesting, all of these what's interesting, bro, is that Fuddruckers is, you know, a product of my primary business. My primary business is Perkins Management Services. A lot of people know that we manage cafeterias for HBCUs. That was my primary business. I started Perkins Management a year and a half out of undergrad. I was 24.
Wow.
This November makes my 18th year in business providing contract food. So we manage cafeterias at HBCUs, military installations, and that gave me a foundation, you know, to
how
be
did you
able
get
to
into
go.
That, man, that's all they say. Well, stay yeah. in unsexy businesses, that's where the money is.
Right, right. So whenever I was in undergraduate school, I got a football scholarship from E. E. Smith Senior High School to go to Fayetteville State. And when I stopped playing football, I went to work in the cab. And I just absolutely fell in love with it. And I started doing everything. I worked in catering. I worked on the serving line. I worked in the dish room. Like you said, all of the unsexy things, right? Yeah. To learn the business. And I fell in love with it. And I went to work when I graduated for a big company and, you know, just saw that things were being done differently, you know, and I felt like I could have an opportunity to be able to improve services at HBCUs. And I launched Perkins. And it's been a, you know, a dogfight, man, because I operate really in a red ocean, you know, as a independent minority owned business, man, it's different. And so, you know, I was looking for ways to diversify the company in 2019. And I was reading articles that a company called Luby's Incorporated, which was a former parent company for Fuddruckers, was going to be divesting its assets. And Fuddruckers was one of them. And so we jumped in the process.
Welcome to the Go Fish Village podcast. As a Chinese proverb says, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. At Go Fish, our goal is to teach individuals just like you how to build wealth through real estate.
You know, to
how
be
do you know that piece. You could even, like, you know, just not to cut you off, but
yeah,
how does one even know that I can even try to, when you say a company's divesting its assets, so I guess they
yeah
trying to liquidate so they could, you know,
yeah.
take whatever win they could take away. They want to just
yep.
clear their
that's
assets.
Right.
How do you even know, like, how to identify that type of opportunity? Like, how
man, I read our article. I read an article that Luby's was going to start investigating, you know, ways to divest. And, you know, I read between the lines, so to speak, and made some assumptions, but I needed to prove whether those assumptions were true or not, that they were really going to be selling off. And when I read the article, it was in the Houston Chronicle. And I said, you know, this could be a good potential opportunity for me to diversify the company. So as a result, I jumped at the opportunity. I sent an email just out of the blue to the CEO and told him I wanted to come and see him. So I came to Houston and made my interest known that, you know, if what the article was saying was true, you know, I got an interest. And
no, but
you know,
at this time, are you like, man, you know, have you ever purchased a business before?
No, first time I ever done anything like this.
Because I'm sure to purchase something like 18 mil, some net worth requirements,
man,
some background requirements. Bruh,
it was the absolute hardest, you know, thing that I had ever done. Everybody kept saying no. You know what I mean? Like, when the process started, man, we had to deal with an investment bank. You know, Luby's, of course, was represented by an investment bank. So that means I needed to be represented by an investment bank, right? It wasn't anything that I had ever done before. And, you know, I needed, you know, I had a learning curve, so I needed some support, right? So I reached out to several people that I trusted, Dean Harvey, you know, from Howard. I told him what I was trying to get done. He gave me some advice. You know, my mentors in Baltimore, Ed Brown and Keith Lee over at Brown Capital Management, Blair Walker. I'm sure everybody's read, you know, Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun?
And
Blair was with me, you know, throughout the whole process, man, and introduced me to Loida Lewis, you know, Reginald Lewis's widow. And she, you know, gave me a lot of advice and a lot of encouragement through the process because I was an underdog, bro. You know, and so I had done a deal with KPMG to bring them in to do some consulting with me to help me do some evaluation on the company.
You had to spend big money just to even,
bruh.
Before you even spent big money.
This game right here is not for the faint of heart, bruh, and it's expensive. You know what I mean? And, you know, you're right. You got to spend bread to even determine whether or not it's a good fit for you. Just evaluating the company if you're going to do it right, if you don't have that skill set. So that meant lawyers. That meant, you know, consultants, investment bank, you know, folks, right? So I couldn't afford to have this arsenal of, you know what I mean, you know, investment banks and lawyers. So, I mean, I had to set budgets and parameters, say, hey, not to exceed, you know, this amount. I had to, roll my sleeves up and just start doing a lot of evaluation on my own. And it taught me a lot about my own skill set, right? You know, what my own abilities are and what I can do. So I had some support, man, KPMG. And then I got a lot of free support too, man. Like I said, from Lloyd being there, from Mr. Brown and Keith, my homeboy Brandon Comer from Comer Capital. I mean, Zach McDaniels, you know.
What made you comfortable to spend that type of bread? Like, did you have any exposure to their books at all? Like, did they give you any type of, like, understanding of like what their financial strength is before you invest in all those consultants and stuff?
No. Once you in the game, once you have, you know, made your interest known and, you know, they invite you into the process, once their investment bank kind of qualifies you, you know, you at that point, you know, got access to everything. So once you get the data, you know, go, no go, you got to be able to make that determination by unleashing your investment bank, accountants, lawyers to do due diligence. Due diligence is expensive, bro. Companies make millions and millions and millions of dollars just off of due diligence. And I learned that, you know, and you got to go through that process to determine whether it's a go or no go.
So what qualified you to even throw your hat in the ring? Like what type of
drive, like if you can nothing more than drive and determination, bro. When I tell you I was an underdog, my brother, underdog. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, and not to mention this happened during the pandemic, you know, and I'm in the food business and everything got shut down, you know, like all of my campuses, you know, everything, bro, everything just closed. And the reality is that peace, quote unquote, if you will, around me afforded me the opportunity to be able to focus on it, right? But I had to save my current company, you know, because we went from, you know, revenues dropped to zero because of, you know, everything shutting down. And then, you know, I'm trying to pursue this other opportunity, man. It was literally nothing but the grace of God. And so I had to just, you know, put my hand down and, you know, just drive forward. And, you know, but that time period did allow me some time to be able to focus on the deal. And I never gave up, man. I got up every morning. You know, I worked literally in front of a computer all day long, talking to bankers, talking to, you know, big business people who are out here, man, just trying to get help from wherever I could get it from. Right. And, you know, no one had an appetite for it, you know, at the time.
So when you make an acquisition like this, you know, you get an investment bank involved, you got all these other people, is it that 18.5, is that you, are you financing that or is that something?
Yes, I finance it. It's a combination of both debt and equity. So, you know, I had to invest some equity into the deal and then I took on some debt as well in order to be able to structure the financing for that. But typically, bro, these deals are, you know, with venture capitalists, you know, and, you know, investment banks. I learned a lot, you know, even in talking to the people at JP Morgan about, you know, capital stacks, you know, at what levels do other people come in and participate in a particular deal, right? So you get this mezzanine funding, you got venture capitalists, you got debt, traditional debt, then you got equity, and then, you know, you building this pyramid, you know, if you will, as it pertains to different size deals and how much any one particular side can participate, you know, and then you learn about, you know, interests, right? Whether it be controlling interests, you know, and I learned a very valuable lesson about ownership and control. People sometimes confuse the difference between ownership and control. They think, oh, if I got 51%, you know, that means that, you know, I have control. Well, my one thing my lawyers taught me is that you can have less than 51% and still have control, right? You know? Wow. So that was one of the things that I learned.
There what does that mean? Like voting rights or something?
Yeah, people think like, you know, so like the reality is that you can still maintain control of the entity and not necessarily own 100% of it or the majority interest in it and still be able to maintain control. And that was one of the things that my lawyers taught me about how people go into deals with, you know, different types of investment banks and, you know, and different investors. You could potentially wind up being in the minority in terms of ownership, right? But from a from an equity, quote unquote, equity and ownership standpoint, but controlling interest in the company can still be maintained depending upon how you negotiate those terms of the deal. And I had to learn that, you know, because starting a company from scratch the way that I did, I've always owned 100% of my own business. I've never been in a situation like that. I wasn't really interested in that. So those discussions to me made it not as attractive, right? And so I needed to try to figure out a way that would allow me to be able to have 100% ownership of the company. And taking on debt allowed me to be able to do that. Now, some people criticize that. Some people say, you know, it's too much risk. You know, you shouldn't do that. You know, the way that, you know, finance is structured, you know, you should allow other people to spread the risk around and things of that nature. And that just wasn't attractive to me, you know? So
right now you got 100% ownership and control.
I do. Yeah. Wow. Because I'm the, yeah, it's all me. Wow. Because of the debt component, you know, I wasn't afraid of that, you know, yeah.
When you're financing like that much money, is that ain't a 30-year mortgage, is it? That's like
definitely not. And so you know, I have some non-disclosures in my, you know, finance agreement that won't allow me to go into too much detail about the structure, but it itself, you know, it has a, you know, a term on it plus, you know, an interest rate, and, you know, we got to make that payment. You know what I mean?
You got prepay.
Payment. Absolutely. We got to make that payment. So shoot, you know, I got to be aggressive, man. You know, in terms of what it is that we're doing, right?
And that's, I guess, the good thing about it, man, once you pay that debt off, I mean,
oh, we free and clear, baby. You own the whole thing, man.
Yeah, you could cash flow it like the way you want, then probably.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So that's the goal.
You gotta have that exit strategy in place.
Yeah, you do. And you know, a lot of people think about, you know, business in that way. And but bro, I gotta be honest with you. I'm a little bit of a different type of entrepreneur, man. I'm more of a social entrepreneur. I gotta be honest with you. Most people say, you know, a business is an asset. You never should fall in love with it. There's always a price tag for it. Somebody comes along, you know, you're supposed to part ways with it if it's the right amount of, you know, right amount of money. I'm a community person. You know, I think about the importance of having ownership and equity in our own community and having businesses that, you know, the future generations will be able to look back upon and see, you know, as an example of what entrepreneurship is and what entrepreneurship can do, you know, in the minority business community. And so for me, I think about, you know, what that would mean for us, you know. And so when I look at my companies, bro, I really do see them as legacy companies, you know, future generations.
You got kids?
Not yet.
Okay.
So that's what I was going to say next. Future generations for me, when I do have kids, they make it care less, you know, about
this. I would imagine the DMs are a little bit crazy these days.
They're out of control, bro. If you could see some of the stuff flying through my DMs right now, my man, it's unbelievable.
Man, I'm sure the DMs, you probably got more cousins than before the whole nine, man.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
That's good. where are all your spots located, the ones that you own specifically?
So in Houston, Arizona, Kansas City, Missouri, Virginia and St. Louis, excuse me, Kansas City, Kansas, and St. Louis, Missouri.
Have you been to all of them?
I have, man. Touched every last one of them. Now, I ain't there that often. You know what I mean? got a vice president of operations that kind of takes care of that stuff, man. But I'm, you know, I'm focused on strategy right now. But I have to lead the ops to them.
So what are you changing? Because when I was younger, I remember Fort Rucker's kind of being like a TGI Fridays type of
family type.
In a minute, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know if they are in Chicago like that, but
no, the previous ownership exited the Chicago market. We're gonna look to restart reselling it again, you know, in 2023.
Okay. So how are you changing the business model up?
Well, one of the things that we want to try to focus on, man, is consistency across the brand. That's the first thing. You know, we got to make sure that everybody's on the same sheet of music, really sticking to the core values of the brand. Fuddruckers isn't a brand that you really got to explain to a lot of people. There is a generation that, you know, has to be reintroduced to the brand. But as far as our core menu and what we offer, not going to change it, right? I'm adding to it, not taking away from it. You know what I mean? So one of some of the things that you're going to be able to see is us incorporating plant-based alternatives so that we could be more inclusive as a brand, you know, diversifying, you know, our, you know, franchisee base is important, making sure that we've got diversity, you know, man. So the system-wide changes you're going to be able to see, you know, from the very beginning when we start reselling franchises. But as far as like what we're doing in restaurant, man, just building upon what's made Fuddruckers, you know, a dynamic brand over the past 40 years. And that's the goal, man. But we just need consistency across the brand. We need to make sure that, you know, our franchisees are fully supported. We're making the necessary investments in marketing and advertising, and getting our restaurants, you know, in the communities that desire it. And that's going to be on a franchise sales side. And that's what I'm really, really excited about.
Nice, nice. So right now you're not taking on new franchisees, right?
Not right now, no. So, you know, we are going to do that in 2023.
Okay. When, can you give me an idea on what the requirements are for? Like if somebody was interested in doing
it? Absolutely. So we're still playing around with a couple of formulas, but the franchise fee is going to be affordable. $40,000 franchise fee. The royalty fee will be 5%. We're going to develop different models. So like there'll be a full service, you know, traditional freestanding model. We'll have a non-traditional models like for airports, malls, colleges, and universities that will have a lower net worth requirement, because my goal is to make sure that we are diverse and inclusive, right? We don't want to be exclusive as we go out trying to recruit franchisees. So we're going to build all different types of models. So the net worth requirement is going to fluctuate. So we're still working on a formula for net worth, but you know, we will have a model that's set up, man, that's going to allow, you know, people from all different, you know, backgrounds and walks of life to have an opportunity to have a Fuddruckers, even if it's in a non-traditional platform.
So like 10 years from now, I mean, you got about 90 locations now. Like, are you trying to, is there like a target number that you're trying?
Yeah,
to?
Man. Yeah. We want 500.
Wow. And that's all in the U.S.?
Yeah. Right now. But we want to attract some international development as well. You know, we've got, a footprint, you know, the world's footprint, bro. So we want Fuddruckers everywhere, man. And so, you know, our goal is not only to, you know, grow domestically, we want to grow foreign too, man. So, but we're going to crawl before we walk, you know. So, but that's the goal, you know, is to, you know, attract investment, you know, from all over the world.
So what is it like? You know, I know you had your company at 24, and I'm sure it was definitely successful. But now, you know, you're in a bigger, it's a bigger league that you're in right now.
Yeah.
Just exposure and level of responsibility. What's it like being, you know, a black man running a brand that at one point in time was like, yeah. I mean, it's a household word now, but 20 years ago, 25, it was like Fridays, it was Chili's, you know, it was Fuddruckers, you know what I'm saying? Yep. What's it like to grow up seeing a brand, now you're the CEO of that brand, you're a black man in that position, and you're responsible for all of these folks, man. They got their whole life and retirement invested in the decisions that you make.
Yep. It comes with a great deal of responsibility, bro. It's a great deal of responsibility, but just like all business, you know what I mean? Like, you know, when you decide to step out there, you know, you take on, you know, a lot of risk, and everybody's dependent on you, man. Your employees are dependent on you. And, you know, now it's a whole nother level. You know, like you said, you got people who've taken their hard-earned money, they're going into their savings, you know, they're going into their retirement to invest in a business opportunity to create and generate wealth and, you know, a posterity in their family, something that they can pass down to future generations. And, you know, that's the beauty, you know, of entrepreneurship, and it's the beauty of and power of franchising. And so when I think about that, you know, I want to be inclusive, you know, as a franchise owner. You know, I take into consideration the thoughts, views, feelings, and opinions of that franchisee group, because in many instances, that's where, you know, most of your creativity and ideation comes from, is that existing group, especially the legacy group. So I put together an infrastructure from a franchise sales side that is in constant contact and communication with our franchise community, so that, you know, these guys know that they have a voice, and they know that that they have an opinion on the direction of the brand, and I value that. And in addition to that, I want the best, brightest, and experienced consultants, you know, in my company, because, you know, I want to get this thing right, man. You know, so we have a partnership, marketing partnership with Roc Nation that we're very proud of, that, you know, helps guide a lot of our strategic marketing and the direction that, you know, that we go in. Another marketing company called Optimob Media that we use. And we're making a lot of investments right now in marketing and brand strategy, so that, you know, whenever we really get out here, man, you know, in 23, that we're investing our marketing dollars in assets that's going to get the greatest return for our brand. So, you know, those are the things that I've really been focused on.
Brother, making it happen out here, man. So,
trying, bro.
I've been in business, man, 12 years, entrepreneurship 100%. A lot of people, man, think entrepreneurship is just so sexy, man. It's just, you know, 18.5 million. They see the smiling face. They see the cheese, man. Talk to me about the stress, man. Like, what are some of the things that keep you up at night? And it's obvious, you know, payroll and having reliable people and building a team. But what are some of the things that a common person wouldn't know that, you know, might keep you up at night?
You know, the reality is that we're never satisfied. You know, that's the danger of being an entrepreneur, bro, is that this is the hunger is insatiable. You're never satisfied. You never got enough, right? And we never have the ability to really put confines, you know, around our minds as it pertains to innovating and wanting to grow and wanting to get to the next level. It's almost like when you achieve that, you know, that one goal, you aspiring to go a little higher. You understand? Yeah. And so when, you know, as I'm thinking, you know, night in and night out, is, you know, how can I become the standard, you know, for all how all other hamburger brands are judged, right? You know, how, what's that next best thing for us? You know, what are we going to do, you know, to stomp out, you know, Shake Shack and Five Guys and these other brands that we're going to be gunning for, you know what I mean? Yeah. And, you know, those are the things that keep me up at night, you know, making sure that we're the best, you know, making sure that the investments that people are going to make in me, the sacrifices that people make to become a part of my brand, and those that have made them to, you know, to be franchisees now, you know, get the maximum return on their investment. So, you know, that stuff matters to me, you know, as I think about Fuddruckers. And then on the other side, You know, I'm constantly in a fight against the largest corporations in the world. You know, I compete against Aramark, Sodexo, you know, Sodexo Magic and all these other, you know, companies that are out there. And every day you waking up somebody trying to take your lunch, right? the reality is that you got to be tough, man. You know, this is not for the faint of heart. I stopped short of saying it's not for everybody because I believe that anybody that wants to be an entrepreneur should be. But you got to understand that and accept that there is no security in business beyond the day that you're in. You get past that, you can make it. Hey, tomorrow, but you know, AI say it all the time, right? You know, he got a tattoo on his body. Only the strong survive. In business, that's real, right? It's the honest to God truth. Only the strong survive in business because it's going to test everything you got. And, you know, so you got to, you know, accept the fact that you know, there is no security beyond the day that you're in. And you got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. You do that, you can make it. Cause this, you know, it's tough, man. It's like, you know, this ain't for the faint of heart.
Man, how has your life changed since you know, what is it? I mean, I'll be on my timeline. I'm seeing you like 18. Yeah. Like, you know, I'll just be seeing stuff. The algorithm be putting you right in front of the center of my face all the time, man.
How it's unbelievable, life, man. It's unbelievable. I mean, you know, the reality is I'm an introvert, man. You know, I'm not a person that likes a lot of attention. So, you know, there were times where I felt like it had died down, man. And then, you know, Rose reposted. And as soon as Ross reposted, it take, you know, caught like wildfire and it picked back up again. And everybody's talking about it. But my people are excited about it, man. For me personally, you know, I go hide behind a rock somewhere. But for what it means for my community, what it means for where I come from, what it means for the people who aspired, who come from nothing and aspire, you know, to do and be something great, it means a lot for them, right? You know, to be able to see something like that. And I've had to come to accept that if I have to be that example for my own people, then it's a blessing, you know. But, you know, I don't necessarily want to be viewed as, you know, I've arrived at a mountaintop, bro. I'm climbing the mountain, literally, you know what I mean? But, you know, not to, you know, lessen the accomplishment. But the reality is, bro, you know, the work is just begun.
Man. So what was it like growing up in Fayetteville?
Fayetteville is a very interesting place, man. You know, it's my home, man. You know, born and raised there, man. You know, we grew up less than ideal circumstances, bro. You know, we lived in a little housing community called Elliott Circle, you know, a little one bedroom spot, no central air, no central heat, you know, heating the motherfucking place by kerosene heater, you know what I mean? You know, it's just rough, man. My grandma lived in the projects for 35 years, man. Housing projects called Campbell Terrace. And we were poor, man. Just didn't really know it.
It was out. So what motivated you? Because obviously, I mean, you went on to get a scholarship for football.
Yeah.
Got your MBA. You had your own business at age 24. I mean, what was motivating you at that age, man? Because, I mean, Fayetteville is not a city that I really hear about ever.
Mm-mm. No, man, you and not really. It's just Fort Bragg brought, you know, is the thing that's, you know, really giving our city some notoriety, man. You know, it's the largest military base on the East Coast. And so, you know, that's what, you know, brings a lot through there. The city is, you know, is growing and developing now. But, you know, I was just motivated, man, I think even more to achieve because of my mother, really. You know, she, you know, education was very important to her. You know, so she made sure that we went to school, made sure that we did the things that we were supposed to do. And the reality is that, you know, we grew up poor, really, you know what I'm saying? You know, and, you know, but, you know, we had everything that we needed, you know, and when I reflect back on it, and I've been doing a lot of that recently, you know, just thinking about what it was like growing up and what we didn't have, you know, but how we made the best of what we did have. And then, you know, but I was always a reader, man. You know, my first hero was Thurgood Marshall. I wanted to be a Supreme Court judge whenever I was a kid, man, until I realized you had to be a lawyer first. And I had no interest in that. So, you know, that quickly went away. And, you know, Martin Luther King was one of my other heroes that, you know, that my mother introduced me to. But, man, in fourth grade, you know, man, I met one of my best friends, my brother. his parents were entrepreneurs. And that was the first time I ever seen anything like that, man. Black people who live very well, you know, they own their own home. They had a business. They, you know, drove Mercedes. You know, we were walking and on the bus. You know what I mean? We went to the grocery store with food stamps, you know. And so to see people with the same skin color as me, you know, living at that level was a great inspiration for me. And I'm you know, I say this all the time. I was very indebted to them for that level of exposure, because it changed my mind about what we could really do and be, you know. And and that was great, because it was nothing like I had ever seen before in my life. And so that's why I always try to take the time that I do to spend with younger people than me, and then push and encourage them, you know, to be entrepreneurs. So if the article does anything, you know, in the circulation of it, that's what I want to see it do. Inspire other people to go out and join this fight, because it's not over, you know? And that's what I want to see, because where there's a will, there really is a way. That proved it to me, you know, being able to get this done during the pandemic.
So, and that's a dope story, man. I mean, was it when you were playing football, were you like, okay, I'm trying to use football as just a way to get free education, or were you actually trying to like make it to the league?
No, I wasn't. You know, football for me was something that, you know, I just tried, man, while I was in high school. My friends were just like, bro, like, you know, man, you need to come play, you know, and it came natural to me, man. I had a defensive end.
Okay.
Oh, and, man, you know,
beating on folks, man.
Well, yeah. Hitting people, kudos, man. You know, I put a beating on a couple, but I took some too. But, I was good enough, you know, to be able to get a scholarship. And, you know, I was recruited by several schools. But Division II, man, I wasn't Reggie White out there, nothing like that. Okay. So, you know, I wasn't going to the league or nothing like that. But it was a means to an end in terms of, you know, getting myself into school, and I was successful in being able to do that. But that's what took me to Fayetteville State originally.
So when you graduated from Fayetteville State, did you and you started your business? Your business, it was doing pretty well before you got to Howard.
Yeah. I came to Howard in 2011 for my master's, and I finished in 2013. At that time, see, how long had I been in business? I started in 2004. So, you know, yeah, man, been in business for seven, eight years by that point. So, you know, so that's whenever, I got there, and, you know, we just kept pushing, bro. Like, you know, I wanted to go to Howard, you know what I mean? That was, you know, important for me, you know, because I wanted to get my master's. And, you know, I wanted to go to HBCU, and I was the first student to apply and accepted into the, you know, executive MBA program there at Howard. And, you know, the rest is history.
Welcome to the Go Fish Village podcast. As a Chinese proverb says, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. At Go Fish, our goal is to teach individuals just like you how to build wealth through real estate.
What, even after having a successful business, what made you want to go back to Howard? Because, I mean, to be honest, I mean, you probably were more experienced in business than a lot of years. At that point, to have a, you know what I mean? Because it's one thing to learn stuff in the classroom, but the classroom can't teach you about the emotions that's involved with decision-making. You know, mm-hmm. When it's your money, when it's your life, when it's your retirement, when it's all of your stuff, your name on the line. I mean, why go back and get a master's degree?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to make sure that, you know, I prepared myself in the best way possible to be able to compete, man. You know, I'm competing against, I mean, it's just damn near seems like insurmountable odds sometimes, man, you know, because I'm competing in a red ocean, man, against multi-billion dollar corporations. I wanted to make sure I was sharp. I wanted, and you know, my MBA from Howard, bro, challenged me greatly. And I learned a lot, You know, while I was there. But, you know, I'm a lifelong learner, man. You know, I really believe in the power of education. It was the way that I was raised. And, you know, and I want to be associated and affiliated with, you know, minority serving institutions. And that's what my focus has been, you know, and not only in my business, but also, you know, in my own work, you know, and working in and around HBCUs.
Was you ever in class? Like, you don't know what you're talking about. What you talking about?
All the time, man. You know, but you got to humble yourself, you know. Yeah, you know, so, I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, you listen to people and it's theoretical.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, they, and that's what they got to do. They got to teach the theories, right? Reality is that it's always different whenever it don't quite go that way in real life. So when you start having to apply practical circumstances to theoretical instances like that, You know, that's whenever your street smarts and everything else got to kick in, because it never goes the way that you could potentially plan it out on paper. And you got to be wise enough and have enough courage to be able to pivot and still be able to press it forward.
So what was that experience like being, having in an executive MBA? Because those, I know it targets like high level people.
Yes.
That are in business or have high ranking positions. I mean, what was that experience?
Man, it's like compiling 24 months worth of MBA work into 18 months, bro. It was intense, it was hard, and it was fast. You know what I mean? And you could really get off track, you know, if you're not focused, man. And I think I did it right at the perfect time, you know, because, you know, my business was transitioning. I wouldn't have been able to do something like that while managing Perkins and now managing Foot Rucker. So I did it at, you know, the right time, you know, at 31 and then finishing at 33. And, you know, and so, I mean, it was like, you know, it was, you know, but it was great though. I mean, I had great professors there, you know, not so much in business law, you know, I almost want to square up with that business law teacher that I had, bro. I mean, you know, it was the worst grade I got while I was in the program, bro. But other than that, I mean, you know, it was good. You know, it was still good, but I mean, I wasn't too thrilled with my business law teacher, bro.
It'd be like that, man. It'd be like that sometimes, man. So, so you still running both organizations? Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Yep. You know, I president, CEO of Perkins Management, still the number one sales guy running around from HBCU homecoming to HBCU homecoming, politics and trying to get contract, protecting the ones that I do have, you know, because somebody trying to come get them every day. It's a cutthroat political game that people play, man. It's almost like it's worse than construction, bro. You know, construction industry is very competitive, but this contract food management game, bro.
So what goes into that? Like, what are your responsibilities when you put a bid in for like something like that?
Well, this business especially, it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, serving food. It's got everything to do other than that. This is truly a relationship business, right? The business that I'm in, it's a cutthroat competitive business that, you know, shifts depending upon who's in power. And it's very, very political, you know, and I didn't know that in the very beginning, you know, coming out, you know, wanting to, you know, be a Black-owned food management business, realizing, you know, as you continue to go, you start peel back layers, you understand it's in some instances, it's less and less about food and more about relationships and politics. So, you know, that's just the way that the game goes. But the reality is that, you know, those that are the best at it win.
So, but if you're a food management company, like, what are you managing?
Cafeteria.
So, like, you hiring, like, all the chefs?
Yep. You got to hire all the chefs. You got to order all the food.
It's quality, you know, control on the food and all of that.
Quality control. You got to bring in the national brands to run, to put in the food court. You know, you responsible for the catering, all of that.
So, it's not, so basically Howard would be like, hey, this is the space.
Yeah.
Here goes the contract. For example, here go $1 million, man. Make it happen.
Yeah.
So about the revenues that are generated.
Yeah.
The revenues that are generated, like if my school has like a McDonald's or whatever, are you like renting that space out on behalf of the school? Like, how does all of that work?
Yeah, so the school provides the space and the contract is technically a lease. So you're managing the facility on campus for them. So you're responsible for providing all of the meals on campus to the students. That is a part of their meal plan. So you got to run the cab. So like at Howard, it would be Blackburn and, you know, the Annex. And then, you know, you got, you know, retail that would be on campus, which would effectively be the punch out. So all of the brands that are there, and then, you know, whatever kiosks that may be in other buildings on campus, that's you would be responsible for managing those, as well as the catering that's on campus. So they pay you for catering separately. They pay you for the students' meal plans and retail, you know, combined in a, you know, in a student meal plan. So that's kind of how it works. And then, you know, you're responsible for providing commissions. In some instances, you make investments to build out the space, and you recover your investment over the life of the contract. So it's, in many instances, become a big boy game, right? You know, so big boys come in, put multi-million dollars on the table. Sometimes they entice you with the, you know, a signing bonus. You know, here, let me just slide this signing bonus in my proposal, see how difficult it is going to be for you to walk away from free $2 million. You know, just for signing up with me, and then we're going to invest X, Y, and Z in your infrastructure, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, it's just it's that kind of game, you know.
Man, so is it easier when you got the lease and you like, all right, Chick-fil-A is going to take this spot? Is that like something you ain't got, like a headache you ain't got to worry about?
No, you got to manage it. Chick-fil-A gives you the franchise or the license to operate restaurant on campus, but your company got to run it.
So that means if you got a Chick-fil-A right here and a Starbucks right there, you got to learn how to operate.
Yep.
Oh, I got it. I didn't know that, man. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Man, yep. So even if is it you serving liquor too? Is that if that's in the contract?
In some instances, yeah. Mm-hmm. Some campuses are quote unquote dry campuses that don't allow it. Some, you know, will have alcohol as part of catering sometimes, but never, you know, a student program, of course. But yeah, you know, we got to have liquor licenses in some instances to, you know, set up bars and things of that nature as a part of our catering.
How many schools are you at now?
10.
Oh, wow. So you're trying to grow that aggressively too, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
Man, yeah, so is that a high margin business?
It can be, you know, by volume. So, you know, you got to be able to put it together. You know what I mean? But, you know, I'm the small guy on the block, depending upon, you know, who you ask. I'm independent, you know. So unlike a lot of these other companies that are out there doing all these majority partnerships, I bid as Perkins, you know, and we've been able to hold our own without that. And, you know, so, you know, as a result of that, we've grown slower in some instances, and that's cool. But we hold our own, you know, we ain't scared of nobody. You know,
I know Sodexo, they was holding down Howard for
quite a time. They've been there half my life.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So when people complain about the quality of the food, that's who we should be complaining to, is Sodexo and not to Howard or?
Well, I mean, you know, anytime there's a concern, you know, you quite naturally, you know, you always want your customers to come to you first. So I guess that would be the appropriate thing to do, is make it known to the incumbent. And then, you know, I guess if you don't necessarily get the desired result, you know, you want to take it to the, you know, the administration or whomever they may have as a designee on campus to deal with that kind of thing. But, you know, they've been there for a long time. So, you know, I'm pretty sure they figured out how to, you know, deal with the politics of the business.
So if you can go back and give advice to your 18-year-old self,
yeah,
what would that be?
Go slow and hire better.
Yeah, building the team is so important when you starting off in business. That first hire, second hire, that really sets the tone for everybody else, because you want your voice to be heard when you're not around.
That's right.
Good one, man.
Yep. So that's the advice that I would give to my younger self. Go slow, hire better, you know, hire smarter, you know, and don't hold on to people so long, man. You know, when people show you who they are, what their capabilities are, you believe them. If they not meeting your expectations, you know, hire slow, fire fast, you know.
It's hard firing people sometimes. That's, you know, I fired somebody 2 days ago, man.
Yeah.
I should have fired that person.
Probably that's right.
No. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? When I get back from out of town, I'll do it. And I got back from out of town. Then I was like, man, I'm gonna do it after Halloween. Then Halloween come, I'm like, looking at the time card, I'm like, man, this person, you know, person been late this day, and everybody else seeing it, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So you gotta lay down the law, unfortunately, but I guess the home is given, man, much is required.
Absolutely.
But Nicholas Perkins, man, you've been a great guest. Thanks for coming on the show.
No, bro, I appreciate it. Honored. Honored that you would have me. Honored that you would have me. If there's anything I can ever do to be a support, you know, don't hesitate to reach out and let me know.
Absolutely, brother.
Thank you for joining the HU Movemaker podcast, where we highlight folks that have contributed to the Howard legacy at the highest levels. To hear more interviews or purchase merchandise, please visit www.HUMovemakers.com.